time when we are actually ready for sex in our adolescence. And it is this feeling of I want sex. It is non-specific. It is like I am hungry. I'm not particular about whether I have the Chinese rolls or the pork buns, but I am hungry. Now, what would we do without sexual desire? This is what I thought, you know, when I started reading about it. I thought, aren't we fortunate that God gave us a charge and said, you know, go out and procreate and fill the earth. And then he said, oh, by the way, I'll make it fun for you. Can you just imagine if we had the charge that said, go out, procreate and fill the world. Oh, but by the way, it's going to be just about as exciting as filling in your tax return. Apologies to any tax accountants who may be here. So, our gracious God has given us this boiling cauldron of desire that is turned on when we are ready to procreate in both males and females. So, why then aren't we just running around from teenagers making love to everybody we pass? It is because in the same way as we are given this, we are also given control mechanisms. So we're given control mechanisms in our frontal areas of our brain, and this is research coming out from Kinsey Institute, for those of whom you might have seen the Kinsey movie, and they are now finding areas in the brain, in the frontal area, which we talk of as inhibitory and stimulatory centers. So it's like having a brake and an accelerator, and sort of, so you can accelerate the desire and you can inhibit it. So we have these controls, and when you take alcohol and drugs, basically what happens is the inhibitor gets removed. When I talk to teenagers, those of you who work with teens may know that teenage brains actually aren't mature in terms of their control systems. Say, you know, those of parents are going, oh yeah, sure, I know that. And that's why risk taking is more common there. And what we find is that drugs and alcohol remove this inhibition, or what I call the wet rag when I'm talking to young people. So we have this gift of sexual desire. Now, unfortunately, in our sort of human nature, this wonderful gift of wanting to have sex is abused and perverted and twisted. For Christians, we call it sin, but basically it's a perversion of a good gift, because good gifts are often fragile. When you receive a good gift, whether it be a piece of jewelry or a Porsche, whatever the good gift is, it's got to be looked after. It's a gift that needs to be cared for. And so what happens is that when we've been given sexual desire, we want, this gets perverted. And so in our humanity, we tend to want more desire. And you all had a bit of chili chocolate when you came in, which of course is considered an aphrodisiac. I'm not going to ask you to rate your horniness quotient right now after the chili chocolate, but chili is capsaicin, and chocolates have, I think, phenylalanine, which increases endorphin levels. However, there's a lot of this kind of aphrodisiacs that people talk about. Rhino horn, when have you last sucked a rhinoceros horn? Or deer antlers. Basically, the aphrodisiacs have very little direct chemical effect. What it is the context. So through history, we have searched for a perfect aphrodisiac. Just as an aside, one of the drugs that are used commonly for erectile dysfunction, the Levitracialis Viagra group, are not aphrodisiacs. They only act when sexual desire is already happening. Just a bit of information on the side. Now, we then want more desire, and so we seek the quick fix desire, and therefore we look at pornography. So we have, as I said earlier, porn use is epidemic now. And when we push that further, we have fetishes, and push it even further, we have people with paraphilias. And if you want to talk later about any of this, I'm happy. So we take this good gift that was meant to be used to direct us to have sex, and we pervert it and we use it in ways that are unhealthy. Now, as people who are working in the city, I'm assuming that many of you do are in full-time employment, there is also the concern about thwarting sexual, healthy sexual desire with other quote-unquote idols in your life. And your work-life balance is extremely important when it comes to sexual desire. So you can decrease desire and, you know, inhibit desire by just having this work balance in your life. So if you're sort of working all the time, you're going to have a hard time getting really turned on the moment you go home. So we can talk about all this later. So, sexual desire. Now, once we feel this desire, which is, I want sex, we've got to move into the next phase, which is falling in love. Now, this is a fascinating thing, falling in love. And I can see people smiling because you're thinking back to when you fell in love. Again, deep in our brain, there are areas that when you fall in love, it's like you're sitting here in, you're concentrating, you know, maybe you're sitting in church, you're sitting in office trying to concentrate on a spreadsheet, and you look across the room and suddenly it's like the lights go on in your deep parts of your brain. It's like the fireworks go off over the harbor bridge. Oh no, wrong state. Harbor bridge of Sydney. And you know that she or he is the one. That's the chemistry. It's chemicals, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, deep in your brain. A cascade of mainly dopamine that sprays from these deep areas in your brain. What does it do? It causes all those wonderful feelings that you have. It causes you to concentrate on that loved one. Think when you were in love, or you are in love right now, or this is what you have to look forward to when you fall in love. It, you know, that person becomes the center of your universe. He or she alone matters to you. You have intrusive thinking. You're trying to finish off that whatever document you had to, but all you can think of is her face. Now, this dopamine sprays to the frontal parts of your brain, and what it does is it really affects your ability to make decisions about things. So this person you are looking at, who you're falling in love with, then begins to look like the best thing in the world for you, which is kind of fortunate, because if the loved one, you know, if my husband hadn't fallen in love with me and thought I was the most wonderful thing in the world, I would probably not have got a husband, because, you know, if every man is looking for that perfect person, you're not going to be drawn to anyone at all. But when you feel that first chemistry and the dopamine spray, your brain begins to look at that person, and that person begins to be the best person in your life. Now, what then how do I fit that into my belief as a Christian? When I started reading about that, and I thought, isn't this amazing? Here's a mechanism that is pointing our I want sex towards one person. As Christians, we call that one flesh. So it is pointing us towards one person. It is saying, here is your mate. He or she may not be perfect, but hey, I'm going to make your brain think she is or he is. And I mean, I'm sure we've all been in this experience, in this situation, where you look at a couple and go, oh my goodness, whatever does she see in him? I mean, he's such a out. And she's like going, he's the best thing that ever happened to me. And you're going, okay, if you say so. And isn't that wonderful? Because that means there is a chance for those of us who aren't that perfect. And, you know, that's really exciting, because that's what God wants us to do, to find that person who may be not, you know, that perfect person. Then once you fall in love and you are that one flesh, then you can move on to really connecting with that person. Now, just like everything else, this one flesh drive of dopamine and norepinephrine going up and serotonin going down, that's just the chemistry for those of you who really want the chemistry, can be perverted and can be misused. And so we see pornography again. You know, people bonding or people falling in love with their porn stars. We see the same love chemistry being excessively obsessive, and we see stalking happening. We see people falling in love and being rejected, and we see the pain of rejection. So you can see the outcome of how these things can be abused. So, finally, once you've fallen in love and you've seen this person and been drawn to this person, you have this emotional high. You're feeling good. The dopamine's just, it's almost like having a cocaine high. It uses the same chemical pathways. And you're just feeling so good. Unfortunately, it doesn't last forever. Otherwise, you know, those of us who are in 37 and 38 year marriages wouldn't survive. You know, if every time I woke up and I looked at my husband, if I started getting, you know, tachycardia, pulse racing and sweating and, you know, thinking that he's the most wonderful one in the world, you know, you can continue to think that, I guess. But, you know, you couldn't live. So it doesn't last for more than 12 to 15 months or 18 months, maybe 2 years. This again, some people don't recognize. And so some people, when that high passes off, they feel this is not right. I've got to find someone else. So you get this people who, they call it sex addiction, but it's really people who want the love high. It's like wanting a cocaine high. So you move on to your next affair. And you all heard of spokespeople and other people in the news who have done that, who kept moving from one partner to the other, searching for that high, that perfect high, that perfect partner with whom we're going to stay in love and feel that high forever and ever. I'm sorry, that's not the way it works. You're with that perfect partner that you've had your one flesh relationship with. You've felt that wonderful drawing and excitement, and you've gained that person. So you've got the reward of that person, and you're together. You're going to be moving into your third phase of what we call bonding. The forever after. And you know, for those of you who are young, you're going, oh no, not that. That's the boring phase. Actually, it's not. It's driven by different hormones. We call them oxytocin and vasopressin. We call them the cuddle hormones, because the more you cuddle, the more you get oxytocin and vasopressin. Isn't that nice? So you can start cuddling soon after. Well, now if you want to, I guess. But these are the hormones that really bring you together and keep you together. They're the hormones that, especially oxytocin levels, just go through the roof when you have sexual intercourse, especially if you have an orgasm. And so every time you have sexual intercourse, you are pushing your cuddle hormones, your bonding hormones up. So the more sex you have, if you're married or, you know, if you're with a partner, the more sex you have, the more you will bond. I sometimes get asked, you know, you're a Christian, you want everybody married. What about de facto people who are in a sexual relationship? Yeah, sure, go ahead, have plenty of sex. Very soon you'll be so bonded that you'll be heading for the altar. So, anyway, this bonding is God-given to keep a couple together, because we are created to bond for eternity, for bringing up children, for being together. It's a little typology, a little model of what God says He and His people will be. This perfect relationship. Of course, we human beings are not perfect. Even as a sexologist, we cannot have a perfect sexual or any other type of relationship. And we search for that perfect relationship. You know that that perfect relationship, that perfect understanding can only come from a loving God. But in our life, this bonding is a mechanism of bringing that in a small way to us. Now, the flip side of this is that every time you have sexual intercourse, you bond. So, there is really nothing called casual sex. Because when you have intercourse, you form a mini bond with that person. Unless, of course, you're zonked out of your brain, you know, with alcohol and drugs, and you really aren't having any kind of emotional attachment in the act of intercourse. If it is an act of intercourse associated with any form of intimacy, you are bonding because you are increasing your oxytocin levels. It's the same hormone that bonds a mother and a baby when suckling at the breast. So, you are bonding. Therefore, that's why breaking up after having sexual relationships is so painful, because you've superglued yourself to a person biologically, you move away and you tear yourself away, and therefore you leave a bit of yourself. I've talked to young women especially who, you know, meet a guy, they go out, the guy, they get a bit drunk, you know, it's a nice ambiance, they have sex, and often the young man can't even remember what happened, and she's like waiting for 2 days and heartbroken. So, one person can bond even if the other doesn't. So this is where we are in terms of our sexual cycle. It is a God-given gift that takes us from this first stage of I want sex, and then it draws us into concentrating our energy and our focus on one person, on a one flesh relationship. And then God, in His wonderful gift of grace, then gives us a mechanism that actually makes it that we stay with one person. And the more intimacy and the more sex we have, the more we bond. And then, you know, I call it the old slipper face. You're with this old slipper, it's sort of lost its fur, it's sort of lost its shape a bit, you know, sort of sits in front of TV scratching it. But the point is that it's so comfortable to be in your old slipper. And fairly recent research shows that when you talk to couples who've been together for some time, and they say we are in really happy relationships, really romantic relationships, we still have romance, and you look at their brains, you map their brains, you find that the parts of the brains that are the love bits, you know, those deep bits that were in the liminal love phase, are still firing, but without the obsessive bit. So there's still that excitement of love. And you can bring love back to long-term relationships. And we use this in counseling. We say, what did you do in the limerence phase? And so you can limerence yourself again. So there's a lot of ways that we can use this beautiful model that God has given to actually build up relationships. Now, if this is what I wanted to share with you. But every time I look at this and I read and I prepare for a presentation, especially for mixed groups like you, I come up with thinking, you know, if God was right about how we are wired for good sex, if science is now showing us that the wiring that is we have for good, healthy sex is the way God has actually said in the Bible it should be, you know, I just would love to know what else there is in the Bible about our humanity that really makes sense. Thank you.